A big thanks to 323 Sports for supporting the show. The guys with 323 Sports are a team dealer providing uniforms, gear, equipment, and more to schools and colleges across the country. I've used them on multiple occasions, and their customer service and low prices are second to none. To find out more, visit 323sports.com, or you can reach out directly to a rep at sales@323sports.com. They'll be sure to do it right for your sports program. It's great to have with us today assistant coach for the Ohio State Buckeyes, Coach Brandon Bailey. Coach, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coach Bailey most recently was on staff with the Detroit Pistons. Before that was with the Celtics, both as an assistant and also as a head coach for their G League affiliate. Wanted to have him on to talk about some modern defensive concepts. I saw a stat last year with the Buckeyes, 101.6 points per 100 possessions, which was like close to, I think, like a 20-year record for them. You with 10 years plus experience at the professional level from the defensive side of the ball, what were some of the big takeaways from your time there that you're hoping to implement there at Ohio State?
You know, starting like in the pick and roll, you know, there's a lot of different things you can look at. You know, your off-ball coverage, you know, was there a low man? Was your X out rotation poor? You know, did the big let the roll behind in general? You know, did he not stop the ball? How was his communication? But, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, maybe even more than that, the biggest thing that could have impacted the play was, you know, was there physicality on the ball? You know, was there pressure on the ball? You know, was there kind of connection to the ball handler to make that guy uncomfortable? And I think, you know, no matter where you're at defensively, you know, NBA, college, high school, especially in pick and roll, that's the one thing that you can kind of really focus on and, you know, that can kind of change and help your defense. You know, like there's not really like a magic defense that's going to, you know, necessarily like fix everything. You know, there's a lot of different ways to win. You know, there's a lot of different ways to compete defensively. The main things are, you know, to me, you know, your physicality and your multiple efforts. You know, if you have those two things, generally, you're going to have at least an above average defense. You know, if you can add, you know, a system to that where, you know, guys are on the same page, there's some accountability, you know, you add that to your effort and physicality piece, then you may have something special. You know, I think those are the main kind of takeaways that I've taken away from it in my time in the NBA and also just, you know, my short time here the last few months kind of studying the college game.
As the game has progressed, especially on the offensive side, the defense has almost been a little bit slow to catch up to it, maybe at the college level, at the professional level, maybe not so as much. But as you see new guys coming into the league and even having coached there at the G League, was it the multiple efforts that they were lacking in, or what did you feel like was like the biggest thing that they needed to adjust to coming into the pro level?
There's a lot of different things. Like in the pro level, like the college guys are kind of getting used to in the pro level, you know, generally like the scheme is pretty much the same in the NBA. There might be like a few differences there, but the schemes in college are a lot different from the ones you're going to see in the NBA. So you're pretty much kind of learning like a whole new defensive system. I'd say like the biggest thing is, you know, guys don't really know, you know, what they're capable of. You know, they think that they're playing hard, or they think that they're playing with force and physicality. And a lot of times, you know, they're not. Or, you know, they'll make an excuse of, well, you know, hey, this guy's a shooter. You know, I can't really help here, or I can't keep this ball on one side of the floor. This is a hard thing to do. Defense is hard. Winning defense is really, really hard. And, you know, especially in the pro level, the NBA wants high scores. You know, they want there to be a lot of fouling, or not, maybe not a lot of fouling, but they just want a wide open game, and they don't want you to be able to stop them, honestly, because they want these like highlight plays. So your job as a defender is really, really difficult, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you have to just concede, you know, and stop doing your job. The top defenses in the NBA are still the ones that win. Even Denver, who I think finished at like 15th, they started at like 25th or something like that in the NBA. And as the season went on, they became, you know, one of the top defenses in the NBA. They like, if you look at like the last month or two in the league. So, you know, that's still what wins. And, you know, you can't accept the fact that the offensive players are really, really skilled. You can't accept, you know, the officiating, the rules, the spacing. You know, you still have to find a way to get it done. And that's the whole reason why a lot of these guys are in the NBA, is because they have the athleticism, the size to kind of do both of those things. The minute you accept the fact that this is a really hard thing to do, but I still got to get it done, the better off, you know, you're going to be there.
So let's talk about some of the individual categories, I guess, kind of focusing in on specific aspects of the defensive systems. I'm going to just kind of go through each of these, and you can get as detailed as you want to about things, but maybe even some of the newer things that teams are trying to adjust. I always feel like it's kind of like this cat and mouse game of introducing new and trying to combat the old. Doesn't seem like that long ago where just simply icing a ball screen was the thing, like, but even some international things that maybe are making their way over. In regards to ball screen defense, what you were attempting to do, how it changed, or if it changed based off of who you were playing, and maybe even new things that teams were trying to kind of neutralize the advantage that was created off of the ball screens.
Yeah, I think number one, like, you still got to find a way to dictate like what's going on. And like I said earlier, that starts with your physicality. But you know, a lot of teams this year, probably more than the last few years, went back to icing, you know, whether that was old, you know, a lot of teams kind of went away from it the last few years and went back to it this year. Denver, us in Detroit, Indiana, Philly, Phoenix, New Orleans, Dallas, you know, a lot of these teams kind of went back to that in order to kind of like slow down offenses and negate like side to side movement and things like that, you know, which I feel like helped for the most part. You know, there's a lot of different ways that like teams are trying to experiment in order to like throw a different look at teams. Obviously, like blitzing isn't anything new, but people are still doing all that stuff. You know, one thing I think with the, especially with the prevalence of like switching, you know, if you have the personnel to do it, like the more you can kind of manipulate matchups and like distort different guys on different people in order to like make switching fit better for you or maybe fit your system a little bit better. You know, I think that's always really helpful and key. You know, don't feel like you have to put your five on the other guy's five if you don't have to. Like if you can hide them on, you know, whoever the non-skilled player is on the floor other than that guy. I've always found that to be really, really helpful. You know, a lot of teams, or not a lot, but like a couple teams in the playoffs experimented with like some nexting or peeling. You know, that's a big European concept. A lot of teams experimented with that in the playoffs, which I thought was helpful and beneficial for those teams, especially in, you know, some pick and roll situations where they were trying to take away the big, like the seam and things like that. And again, it's just like a different look for the offense and something that they're not really used to.
Can you explain what that is just for people who may not be familiar with that?
Yeah. So you're pretty much like, you know, say it's a empty side pick and roll or dribble handoff. It's obviously like a really, really hard action to cover. What they will do is, or some teams will do, especially overseas, is instead of like just dropping the big right there to stop the ball, like they'll keep the big on the roller and really kind of stop the ball with that next guy, that nail guy, and like totally overplay the nail on the opposite side. And there's different ways you can kind of play it after that, right? You could just keep that guy there and recover back to his own man, which is difficult, but it's also a difficult pass to make as well, because he's like kind of up in the passing lane. But also, like, if he breaks that three-point line, you know, you could do what some people call like peeling, where now that guy just, that nail man ends up just taking the ball, and the guy that was originally on the ball just peels or, you know, veers off onto that next guy on the wing, if that makes any sense. So, you know, some teams experimented with that. I thought it was good and effective, especially in small doses. And, you know, again, just like a different look, a look that teams aren't used to at all, especially in the NBA. You know, I could see it kind of maybe coming into play a little bit more next year, especially because there's been some film on it and that those teams had some success with that. So.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to the next thing you talked about. Even with the peeling, there is typically some sort of rotation that goes on. It doesn't have to be that, but I'm even thinking driving a big, stepping up, and then rotating off of that. How do you teach that at the NBA level, and especially early on? How do you drill that? And what are maybe the most common ways that teams are going to rotate? Is it pretty standard, or have you seen variations on that?
Yeah, I'd say the rotations are pretty standard. I think the way that it's taught could be a little different and unique, though. You know, like the basic way to kind of do it is, you know, your basic shell, and it's a lot of it's, you know, like scripted, which has its benefits. I think sometimes people, especially now, kind of scoff at that, but I think there is some benefits to it, especially when you're kind of first talking about it and teaching it, especially to the younger players. But once they kind of get that concept down, you know, I think the more you can kind of read that situation, the better. I think, you know, offensively, especially in the NBA, you know, read-based like development is like really, really prevalent, and it's really, really good. I don't think we did enough of it, or, you know, they do enough of it, you know, defensively, you know, kind of reading the game a little bit more defensively, reading what are the defensive cues that kind of trigger different things. So take like you're talking about, like a defensive rotation, say there's a drive to the basket and it may trigger the low man or it may not to come over and pull in and protect the rim. So like, what are those kind of cues that kind of trigger that guy to rotate over? And then what's the domino that kind of falls after that, and where does that guy go? We did a couple of different things from a shell standpoint to kind of like do that. And, you know, at the end of it is like read based. And I feel like it had a lot of benefits, especially, you know, when we were with the Celtics, we had some of the younger guys like a Romeo Langford, Peyton Pritchard, Grant Williams, Max Strus was with us, Javonte Green, you know, those guys. So yeah, I think the basic way is still, you know, the shell, basic shell defense. But I think the more that you can kind of incorporate, you know, more reads and visual cues for those guys and kind of play it a little live, it's going to kind of speed that learning curve even more.
I know there's a ton of triggers that we could talk about. The one that I wanted to ask you about, though, was just any kind of straight line drive, but even in, you know, college level, high school, probably don't have a ton of those, or you're just a bad defensive team. But it's usually I'm needing some assistance, but it's not like I just got completely beat. And what I've often found is that you do end up with two people on the basketball, which, as we all know, that's like the last thing that we want. What did trigger that so that then you could get into the rotations off the ball?
Yeah, so the main kind of visual cue that we used was, you know, there's a slot drive or, you know, whatever you want to call it there, and kind of reading that ball handler's shoulders. So if that ball handler's shoulders was in front of your teammate, the defensive player, that would kind of trigger, okay, now I got to go trap the box, take a charge, right, or go vertical at the rim. If his shoulders were still kind of within your teammate, we would prefer for everybody to just kind of stay at home there. You know, the thing that, like, you know, we don't have these stats in college. I know you don't have them, you know, and a lot of these coaches that are listening right now may not have them in high school, obviously, either. But in the NBA, you know, an uncontested layup is an 88% shot. It's like something like that. It's like about 88%. And if you just contest the exact same shot, it drops down to like something like 55%. And the more that you can, you know, force that drive out a little bit further, obviously it gets worse and worse. So, you know, ideally we're not overcommitting to the ball, like you're saying. And, you know, as I was alluding to earlier, like not just making that like a direct trigger every single time and making it more like, okay, like, hey, he's under control, or, you know, hey, this is a threatening drive here, kind of reading the ride right there. You know, I think the better off your defense is going to be, because this, I thought this was interesting as well, that again, in the NBA, a baseline drive is actually worse than a middle drive, because if you get into that and now everybody's collapsing and protecting the paint on the baseline, you're getting into like Nash dribbles where, you know, you get cuts and wide open threes, right? Or you're giving up like wide open layups and things like that. So, you know, the more you can guard your yard and take that away, obviously the better. But, you know, I think also reading that situation and not overcommitting to the ball is just as important as well.
I think that kind of begs the next question. Overhelping, how do you avoid it? What does that look like for you all? I'm thinking even, what's your philosophy on, we tend to sometimes corner shooter, how much should I help? How much should my guy be? Should I be taking away the corner completely? That's just one example, but can you give kind of a couple of those and how you prevented the overhelping?
Obviously, don't overhelp out of the strong side corner was big for us. That's one of the best shots in the NBA.
Where did you put that guy?
You know, it depends. You know, like some teams have him like up the line to kind of help stop the drive a little bit because it's up the line. And then if you pass to the corner there, he had a pass over the top of you or through you, obviously, which was difficult to do. You know, we never wanted to give up a back cut ever. That was a big no-no for Coach Stevens. Like, you just don't give up back cuts. So our body position was always as such, like you always stayed beneath your man, which I see benefits to both. But, you know, the end of the day, like, I think the more, like, it's all about defensively, at least in the system that we had, it was all about protecting the paint. That kind of played into that as well, like that body position piece. No back cuts, whether that's, you know, straight, you know, out of a straight drive in a back cut, whether that was in off ball actions, you know, splits, staggers, wide pins, things like that. Like, you just didn't give those up. And, I, you know, guys knew right away, like, if they gave one of those things up, they were probably either going to be talked about on film or, you know, sat down right away. You know what I mean? So that was like a big no-no for us. Obviously, well, we were alluded to the overhelping at the rim, but then also like overhelping on middle drives as well. I think the big thing with that, like with all those things, is like early positioning, you know, whether you're at the nail, whether you're the mig, like the low man, or even in the corner, being in early so you can get out early. Your initial positioning should be your help. You know, your initial positioning helps create the flat drive or helps create a non-threatening drive, because now that drive is a little bit more like contained and slowed down and things like that. So that's kind of how we would try to really emphasize negating those. And then, like we talked about earlier, just, you know, setting up drills and situations or talking about it on film in terms of reading that play of, is it a threat or not? You know what I mean? Who is it? Who is your teammate? Who is that guy driving? You know what I mean? Like, kind of reading those situations as well, too.
A Quick Timeout podcast is presented by Dr. Dish Basketball. Dr. Dish machines are the most advanced shooting machines on the market. If you haven't already, join top programs like the Miami Heat, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Duke Blue Devils, and countless others, and upgrade to Dr. Dish Basketball. And now, save an extra $300 on select models when you mention Quick Timeout Podcast. To find out more, visit drdishbasketball.com. Every play, every stat, every breakdown, on their own they're essential, but altogether they're undeniable. Introducing Huddle Instat, a new advanced data platform that integrates with sports code and every Huddle product you rely on to create an all-in-one data powerhouse. Huddle Instat's advantage tagging and next-level stat reports help you develop your team, and its global film library helps you find the missing pieces to get the most out of every second of film. Learn more at huddle.com/a quick timeout.
How did you teach and how did you talk about the idea of being reactionary versus anticipating without over anticipating?
I think a lot of that just comes with experience and time, especially in the NBA. Like, a lot of the actions are the same. It's hard, to kind of anticipate some things in college because the offenses are so different night to night. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the NBA, it's very like, people talk about this a million times, just like copycat, and like a lot of guys do the same stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of get a general idea of like what's about to happen. A lot of the terminology is the same. So that's how they can kind of like, I feel like, anticipate a lot of the stuff, especially like in the defense. Like, again, a lot of the defenses don't change, you know, like you're going to be in this, a lot of similar systems, whether you get traded or, you know, sign somewhere in free agency. Generally, it's going to be the same. They might emphasize a few things differently, but generally your system's going to be the same. So, you know, if you're in that system for long periods of time, you're going to develop like what the visual cues are, where I have to be in a certain play, you know, things like that. These guys are so smart. Like, number one, they're brilliant players. Their IQs are at 11, whatever you want to say there. And they've been coached by really good coaches, you know, high school, college. If they're like a 5-6 year vet, they might've had two coaches, in the NBA, you know, so a lot of these guys have been taught really well, and obviously they're really, really brilliant players as well. So they, you know, they have really good anticipation skills. That's probably a big reason why they're there to begin with.
What was the philosophy for closeouts? Did it change from player to player? How did you teach both the technique and then what you were trying to accomplish?
Yeah, again, so everything played into no paint. You know, pack line, I think, is more, you know, like sending it to the middle. It might be more, you know, no paint as well. But, like, some guys are really, like, no middle. Whereas, like, for us, we're really focusing on, like, no paint. So the more that we can be square everywhere on the floor, the better we were going to be. You know, we never wanted direct line drives, you know, in either direction. If they were going to drive, you know, towards the rim, it would have to be around us, you know, not like through us. Mm-hmm. And we weren't going to be like in a split stance or giving up angles anywhere. Generally, like offensively, you know, we were trying to create paint threats. you know, whether that was with the drive, pick and roll, with the roller, or like off ball cutting. So everything that we did defensively was trying to negate or take those things away, take away paint threats, you know, so staying beneath rollers, talked about it earlier, staying beneath cutters, right? And then from a individual defensive guard or yard standpoint, it was closing out square, right? And then creating flat drives to protect the paint. That was like the main thing we really emphasized. You know, stick hand stuff was big too, especially with shooters in the NBA. And then, you know, how we really emphasize, you know, challenging shots. You know, I think, especially with Coach Stevens, I think we were always bottom third in 3 points attempts allowed, but we always challenge shots like top five, something like that in the NBA, just because of our, again, number one, our anticipation skills, but also just our multiple efforts to get out there and challenge everything, like we alluded to with like the layup stat as well. So yeah, I think so those are the main things we're really focused on there.
I know, in a lot of time when coaches talk, it comes down to choppy feet versus not choppy feet, but I feel like the whole purpose of the whole thing really stems more from your positioning, which we've kind of talked about, the idea of not overhelping, the anticipation part of it, beyond just a feel for it. Were they watching for anything? I mean, was it pickup of the ball? Was there anything that helped them? Because you don't just consistently find yourself in the top three of 3-point attempts allowed every single year.
Again, like in terms of like contesting shots, like it's hard to really like, you know, limit 3-point attempts unless you're switching a lot, you know?
Sure.
So guys want to shoot threes, they're going to end up shooting the threes. You know, I think the big thing with us from an anticipation standpoint with shooters was more so like understanding personnel. You know, whether you're like getting into airspace, if it's closing out short, what hand is he, you know, like contesting right hand was big for us, or left hand to left hand, in order to like alter shots and avoid fouling at the same time. And then also just, you know, being able to catch drives and slide in chest if they do decide to put the ball down as well. Our defense, off ball defense, had never really changed from a pick and roll standpoint. You know, that helped our anticipation as well. Kind of be there on catches and being ready to take shots away. You know, with last three places I've been, we've always iced. And, you know, if you look at it, you know, obviously from an on-ball standpoint, your on-ball defense always stays the same, but your off-ball defense remains the same as well. You know what I mean? So especially if you have a younger team, there's a lot of benefits there. And like the help you like with what you're talking about, like anticipation and being in the right spots at the right time. You know, like if it's like a basic center field, you know, where maybe you're allowing the ball or like a drop, like allowing the ball to go over the top. You know, there's like three different types of off ball defenses you're going to have, right? You're going to have empty side corner. You're going to have corner filled where the ball goes to the middle. And you're going to have a basic like angle or like spread pick and roll alignment. Whereas like in an ice, it's always the same. You know, you're always going to have a low man on that side. Strong side corner should never really be a part of it. And, you know, you're always going to have like an interceptor ready to take away the corner or X out or things like that. So I feel like that kind of helped us with our anticipation skills, being able to be in the right spots at the right time. And then also like play quicker, play with multiple effort, play with physicality and force in order to get out to take away shooters and or maybe be there on the catch to alter those shots.
A lot was made over the course of these playoffs just because of Jokic and his ability doubling the ball. And probably lower levels, we're thinking a lot of times either off of a ball screen, we blitz the ball screen and that's a double of the ball, or ball thrown into the post and we double. How different did they get when you have a player like that who is now starting to play in five out positions or even more Princeton-like elbow extended type positions?
Yeah, I mean, defending off ball stuff is obviously really, really hard. It's hard to get to bodies quick enough, and it's hard to like kind of blow up those actions without fouling a lot of times, you know, not giving up back cuts, things like that. You know, the main thing we try to always emphasize with that stuff is, again, from an anticipation visual cue standpoint, if the ball hits the elbow, you know, like what are you generally going to see?
Typically where it hits the elbow, I'm seeing either something over the top, like a handoff or fake a handoff. And then you got a zoom on the other side.
Yeah. The ball hits the elbow, especially in the corners, right? Immediately get to the body immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Just to like kind of, you know, again, build that anticipation and being ready to physically, number one, stay beneath the body so you don't give up those back cuts and those slips, and also like just being physical, being ready to war over all that stuff and fight over to knock, you know, handoffs down, or maybe you're able to gap some certain things and things like that. Yeah, I think that was kind of like the main thing from an off ball standpoint. We were really kind of focused on there from like doubling the ball. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things that are hard to defend in the NBA. The hardest thing to do in the NBA is guard like really good players like Jokic. Like, that's like the hardest thing. You know, like, coaches have all the answers until you're playing, you know, Jason Tatum, you know, Joel Embiid, Jokic, Kevin Durant, you know, all those guys. Those are the ones that really kind of gave you problems. In a vacuum, you know, you have like a lot of different things you can kind of do and talk about, but the hardest thing to guard in the NBA is great players. Mm-hmm. Whether you're doubling, whether you're not, you know, it's like, you know, like, pick your poison a lot of your times, especially when you're dealing with a guy like him. Or, you know, Jason's gotten really, really good at like passing out of double teams, you know, stuff like that. Joel's really good, usually before the dribble, things like that. So, yeah, the hardest thing to guard in the NBA is great players, for sure.
You've mentioned several times, or alluded to at least, drills and ways for repping all of this. What are some of the suggestions that you have and things that you guys have used to teach these different concepts?
Yeah, again, I just think it's like, what's giving you the most power? What are you seeing the most in your league, you know, in your conference or non-conference schedule? Getting a good grasp of what those things are so that you're really emphasizing those things. And then what are your cues? When this happens, what's kind of triggering the next step in your defense? For us, you know, a lot of it is communication from a pick and roll standpoint, whether you're switching or in an ice. You know, I think, you know, like we talked about earlier, like, ball hits the elbow, you know, we're going to see some splits. Okay, so what's the trigger there? How do you know a split's going to happen? Well, okay, ball hits the elbow, that's generally what's going to happen. It's usually going to be high split or a low split, like you alluded to. There's a pin down going on. You know, what's your read there? You know, are you reading the guy's depth, like the screen's depth? What are you doing if it's wide? What are you doing if it's tight? You know, if it's a tight curl, what are you doing there? If it's just a shooter, what are you doing there? And I think, like, you know, you can go on and on about it, but I just think, like, identifying what those things are and then, you know, being as creative as possible with them. You know, obviously you have to teach a lot of that stuff and go through it in a scripted way, you know, but I think once you've kind of like done that, you know, don't be afraid to kind of experiment and kind of do the same things you're doing offensively from a, you know, a rim decision standpoint, you know, a pick and roll, you know, read standpoint, all those things you're doing offensively. I would try to do the same things defensively. You know, I think it can only benefit yourself, you know, because you're not playing in a scripted format. And I think, you know, you're obviously still controlling it to some extent, you know, but, you know, I feel like that kind of would, you know, jumpstart or, you know, put your defense in a pressure cooker, especially if you don't have that much time to do certain things. So, yeah, I mean, it's something I'm really interested in, and I think it could be really beneficial. So,
did you guys do a lot of 5-on-5, or was it 3-on-3, or did you break down those actions like we just described, and that's how many men you used?
Yeah, it just depended on what time of the year it was and, you know, what we were doing. So in the NBA, like in the fall, you know, August, September before training camp, you can only go 3-on-3. So that's what we did. We had to do drills and design stuff around that. You know, obviously in training camp, it just depended on, you know, was it like more of a team thing? Was it more of a station thing? You know, that just depended on what you're doing there. Maybe what you were kind of required from an action standpoint, you know, that really kind of depicted it as well. And then also just what time of the year it was, like, you know, are you doing something before practice with a player development group? Are you doing something, you know, before a game with a certain guy to kind of work on different things from a warm-up standpoint? You know, all those different things. I think, you know, there's a million different ways to do it. I just think it depends on what kind of time of the year it is or when it is.
Last thing I'll ask you, film and the incorporation of that, whether that's into practice or one-on-one, what have you found to be most effective, especially on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, like I love showing individual film. I think that's always really helpful. And I think not only showing their clips, but also just almost like a compare and contrast. I spent a lot of time of finding teaching clips throughout the year, mainly in the playoffs. So generally, like, actually just finished it a couple days ago. I'll just go through every playoff game, pull all the missed field goals and turnovers from the playoff games and kind of create teach tapes that way. Like, here's a good ice, here's a good high active hands on the ball, here's a good low man, stuff like that, and then kind of organize it that way, and then just kind of build teach tapes that way. So now I've got like a library of stuff that I can kind of pull out and show guys dating back to like 3 or 4 years ago. So I think, you know, obviously showing themselves is really good, but like, hey, like this is what you did, like, and this is kind of how we want it to look. This is the level it is. This is the highest of the highest level here. This is the NBA playoffs, you know, whatever. If you have that capability, I don't know if there's a lot of people don't, but, you know, if you have that capability, I think that's always really good. Maybe you make teach tapes of your own team, you know, that might help as well, you know, throughout the year, like pull the best defensive clips from the year. Now you've got a great library of clips to kind of show and teach your guys, hey, like, you know, this is what you did, but this is kind of what we're looking for right here in this situation, kind of deal. So whether that's big groups or individual, I think that stuff can be really, really helpful and beneficial.
That's Coach Brandon Bailey, assistant coach for the Ohio State University Buckeyes. Coach, really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great. I'm actually an avid listener as well. I didn't tell you that before. I'd really enjoy your show too. So this is, it was fun to be on. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that, Coach.